Exodus chapter 2, we're going to be studying the Bible character Jethro this morning, and I don't know how much we know about Jethro. This is not to be confused with, what was his last name? Jethro Bodine? Bodine? That was it, Bodine. I don't believe they had much in common other than their first name. What do you know about Jethro? I'm waiting. I took my little clicker remote up to Orlando to the lectureship yesterday up there, and I forgot it at home, so my wife went home to get it for me, so we're going to do without the slides for a moment. But what do you know about Jethro? Father-in-law of Moses. That's what we know mostly about him, is who he was related to. We've got that same problem today, don't we? Sometimes we don't have our own identity. You're just, you're Katie and Kelly's dad. People may not even know your name. You drop them off at school and, well, that's just Katie and Kelly's dad. He doesn't have any identity other than Katie and Kelly. And Jethro's much the same way. He doesn't have much of an identity other than his identity with Moses. What origin, what land was Jethro from? Look in Exodus chapter 2, and I want us to read some of these verses, and how does Jethro even come into the picture? How does he even come into the picture of the Bible? He's the priest of Midian, right? How are we introduced to him? Pardon? Moses what? Moses went to, where does Jethro live? Where did he live? In Midian. Where's Midian? Y'all have a Bible map? I'm going to walk over here, so don't get too concerned here. Do you have a Bible map? Do you know where Midian is? If you were to draw a picture of a Bible map in your mind, where would you put Midian? Is it north or south of Jerusalem? Y'all with me on this or not? Is walking around too much getting to you? I don't think I could keep this up the whole class, that's for sure. Hey, look at this, it's working. South of Jerusalem. Is it east or west of Egypt? East. You get your Bible map, and where was Moses before he met Jethro? Where was Moses living before he met Jethro? Egypt. Moses spent the first 40 years of his life where? In Egypt. That's where he grew up. Why did Moses leave Egypt the first time? He killed somebody. If you killed somebody, would you leave town? Who did he kill? He killed an Egyptian. Did he leave town because he killed the Egyptian? Not really. Yes and no. He left town after he found out that people knew about it. Isn't that weird? You kill somebody, not such a big deal. Then you know that people know about it, and all of a sudden your conscience bothers you. Are we that way sometimes? We can do something. We know it's wrong, but nobody knows about it. And so we feel okay about ourselves. And then as soon as we learn that somebody knows something that we've done, all of a sudden our guilt, our conscience takes over. That's Moses. Anyway, Moses leaves Egypt. And I don't know there's any indication that Moses knew where he was going, other than I'm getting out of town. So Moses leaves. He leaves Egypt, and he goes east. And he comes to the land of Midian, which if you've got a Bible map, you know where the Sinai Peninsula is? You've got your Sinai Peninsula, and just east of there, across the water is the land of what would be Edom and Moab. And that's where Midian is. Midian is there in that land of Moab and Edom, as well as probably parts of the Sinai Peninsula. Because it's probably a safe guess to say that that Jethro lived probably in the Sinai Peninsula. And we say that because where do we find Moses the next time? He leaves. He's gone for 40 years. Where do we see Moses the next time? He's at Mount Sinai. He's at Mount Horeb, another name for it. He's at what the Bible calls the mountain of God on the Sinai Peninsula. So anyway, Jethro is a Midianite. And that fact doesn't speak well of him, because the Midianites were known to be idolatrous and wicked people. In fact, in Numbers chapter 22, we think about Moab having charged Balaam to go and curse God's people. It wasn't just Moab. It wasn't just the land of Moab. It's the Midianites too that had selected Balaam to go and curse God's people. So in Numbers 25 and in Numbers 31, God says to his people, go and destroy the land of Midian. Were they completely destroyed? Were they completely wiped out? After Numbers 31, are we done reading about the Midianites? Where else do we read about them? Judges. Who is it that that Gideon takes his army of 300 up against? The Midianites. And so they were not completely wiped out, but even beyond this time period of what we're looking at this morning, they're still known to be idolatrous and wicked people. So Jethro is from that land. And I don't know how much of that land was in him. I don't know how much of that of those people and how much of their idolatrous and wicked ways. I don't know initially how much of that was in Jethro as he was growing up. His occupation, we're going to talk about this in just in a few minutes a little bit more. He's called the priest of Midian, and it's possible that he may have also been a shepherd. At least he had a lot of sheep, because that's what Moses was doing when he was there, is taking care of the sheep. So it's possible that he also could have been a shepherd. Concerning his family, he had seven daughters that we know of. He had seven daughters and one son. That sounds about even, doesn't it? To have seven girls and one boy. He must have been related to the Sproles somehow. You know, my dad was the only boy with two sisters. I was the only boy with three sisters, and now we got two little girls. So his name must have been Jethro Sproul or something. But here's a man. Oh, by the way, his son's name, if you're looking for a name for your son, is Hobab. So if you've got a grandchild on the way, where's Linda Studer? Wasn't she in here a second ago? If you got a grandchild on the way, Hobab. And if it's a girl, Zipporah. When was the last time you met somebody named Zipporah? I mean, we're looking for unique names today, right? So if you got a granddaughter on the way, tell them that they need to name their daughter Zipporah. That's who Moses married. And Moses and Zipporah had two sons that we know of, Gershom, and the other one is Eliezer. So that's just some brief background information. I want us to look at just a few lessons that we can learn from Jethro. Are you in Exodus chapter 2? I was there and then I closed my Bible. Exodus chapter 2, verse 15. Pharaoh heard of the matter where he had killed an Egyptian and he sought to kill Moses. Exodus 2, 15. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and he dwelt in the land of Midian and he sat down by a well. You know, if you read the Bible, if you ever want to meet a woman, where should you go? I mean, that works, right? I mean, if you want to meet a woman, just go sit down next to a well. Apparently, I mean, it worked for Moses, worked for Jesus. You know, hey, if you know how to meet somebody, just go sit down by a well. Anyway, that just came to me. I thought that was interesting. Now, the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and they drew water. This is a good job for your daughters, by the way. Came and drew water. They filled the troughs to water their father's flock. So before Moses comes along, apparently who's keeping care of the sheep? The daughters are. Verse 17, when the shepherds came, and I don't know if these are Jethro shepherds or some other shepherds, but they came and they drove them away, so it doesn't appear very friendly. But Moses stood up and he helped them and he watered their flock. What a nice guy. When they came to Reuel, that's Jethro, his other name, came to their father, he said, how is it that you have come so soon today? How'd you get back here so soon today? I mean, you never get back this early. What did he find out? Found out that Moses, they tell him in verse 19, an Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds. He also drew enough water for us, and he watered the flock. Would that be perhaps what you would expect from an Egyptian? I mean, here's these Midianites. Here comes this Egyptian, and this Egyptian helps them out. Verse 20, so Jethro said to his daughters, and where is he? And why is it that you have left the man? call him that he may eat bread. You look at Jethro, and here's a very grateful and a hospitable man. He wants to meet the man that helped his daughters out. Not just meet him, he wants to feed the man, take care of the man that had taken care of his daughters. He's a very kind man. He's sympathetic. But what happens beyond this? Is he just obligated to feed him the one meal? Apparently, there's more than that. Verse 21. Then Moses... What happens between verse 20 and verse 21? You got in verse 20, I want to meet this guy. I want him to eat bread. Verse 21, then Moses was content to live with the man. I mean, what happens between, I just want to meet him and have a meal with him, and then the next verse, hey, Moses was happy just to live there. He had a lot of daughters, so that maybe that's, hey, I'll be happy to stick around if you want me to. So pick one. But Moses is content to live with him, verse 21. Jethro gave Zipporah, his daughter, to Moses. She bore him a son, Gershom. And so how long does Moses stick around? 40 years. Moses lives, and I don't know if it's in Jethro's house. It's in Jethro's, it's somewhere in Jethro's household. He's living there for 40 years. When was the last time that somebody did something nice for you or for your children and you thought, hey, it'd be great for this person to live with me for the next 40 years? Is this guy generous? Is this guy a bit hospitable? What did he know about Moses before Moses showed up that day? He could just be a nice guy. Don?
He knew he was a man. He had $7.
He knew he was a single man, 40 years old at that time. He's in his prime, right? And or maybe he's just a young adult. Am I saying too much? Or 40-year-olds not in their prime, and 40-year-olds are not young adults today, apparently. So you got something in your throat there? You need a lozenge or something? He came to the daughter's rescue, but you take a guy in. Of course, he didn't know he was going to be there for 40 years. You think after the first year, maybe he said, hey, Moses, you got enough money saved up? You can move out now? After the second year, 40 years he's there.
Kind of like Jacob's father-in-law.
Just like Laban. But, Laban got the better of Jacob, I think we would say. But here's this guy. He's generous. He's hospitable. Here's this idea that he's also a very helpful man. He gives up his daughter to go and live with Moses. Or at least he gives up his daughter to eventually go and live with Moses. Chuck?
Do you think he ever found out that Moses was not an Egyptian?
Well, you would think he would have. Did he ever figure out that Moses wasn't an Egyptian? You would think somewhere along the way he figured it out. Especially when you get to chapter 4. Look in chapter 4, verse 18. Is it verse 18? Chapter 4, verse 18. This is after Moses sees the burning bush and God speaks to him there. Verse 18, Moses returns to Jethro, his father-in-law, and says to him, please let me go and return to my brethren who are in Egypt and see whether they are still alive. So he figured out somewhere in those 40 years that this guy is not an Egyptian. He says, I want to go back to my people who are in Egypt and maybe see if they're still alive. So here's a man who's a very helpful man. Gives up one of his daughters to eventually go and serve God in a foreign land. Did he help Moses to grow up? I mean, Moses needed to do that, didn't he? At 40 years of age, Moses wasn't ready to lead God's people out of Egypt. He needed to mature. So he brings this guy into his home. And notice that he gives him a job. I think that's significant. He doesn't just bring him back in the home and say, well, if you need a few years to lounge around and get yourself together, that's okay. No. Buddy, if you're gonna grow up, if you're gonna mature, if you're going to become a man, you don't need to be lazy. You don't need to have everything provided for you. Here's a job. You go out and tend my sheep. He permitted him without argument, and we don't have time to discuss this in detail, but Moses goes to him and says, I want to go back to my people. And of course, at that point, Moses is 80 years old. I mean, does he have to ask permission, you know, of his father? No, I'd like to go back. I'd like to go back home. But apparently, he felt like he needed to ask his father-in-law if he could go back. He permits him without argument to not only leave, but to take Zipporah into this foreign land of Egypt and his two grandsons. But something happens. If you're in chapter 4, stay there. Moses leaves, verse 19, and returns to Egypt. And as he's going, there's an interesting thing that transpires in chapter 4. And, look at verse 21. Lord said to Moses, when you go back to Egypt, see that you do all those wonders before Pharaoh, which I have put in your hand, the things he showed him there at the burning bush. But I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will not let the people go. Then you shall say to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, Israel is my son, my firstborn. So I say to you, let my son go that he may serve me. But if you refuse to let him go, indeed I will kill your son, your firstborn. This is what God tells Moses to say to Pharaoh. Verse 24. And it came to pass on the way at the encampment, they're on their way back to Egypt, that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. This is an interesting verse, perhaps a disturbing verse, that God sends Moses with his family to go back to Egypt, tells him in the verses that precede this, you go and tell Pharaoh that if he doesn't let my people go, that I'm going to kill his son. Then in the very next verse, there they are at the encampment, and God sought him that he might kill him. Now, there's been some talk about who the him is here. Is it Moses? Some have thought that perhaps it was one of Moses' sons that's being talked about as the him. What does verse 25 and 26 tell us? This happens. Then Zipporah took a sharp stone, cut off the foreskin of her son, and cast it at Moses' feet and said, surely you are a husband of blood to me. So God let him go, and she said, you are a husband of blood because of the circumcision. Why was God wanting or looking to kill either Moses or one of his sons? According to verses 25 and 26.
He wasn't circumcised.
What had they not done? They hadn't been circumcised. And it was a law of God. Was it just a part of the Mosaic law? Was circumcision just a part of the Mosaic law that wasn't in effect yet? When did God command his children to be circumcised? You go back to Abraham. So here's Moses. He's not an Egyptian. He's an Israelite. Moses should be circumcised. Moses has two sons. Are they Israelites? Sure. They're to be circumcised. Moses is on his way back to God's people in Egypt, and his son is not circumcised. What does that say to God? What does that say to God's people when they get there? How serious are they going to take Moses when Moses isn't even serious enough to obey the commands of God? And we probably don't know every reason that's involved with God seeking to kill either Moses or his son, but did they get the point? Zipporah got the point. Zipporah looked at her son and didn't want her son to be put to death. That was the consequence. If you weren't circumcised, you were to be put to death. And so to save her son, Zipporah goes and circumcises her son. And that's why I think some have thought that maybe it was God seeking to kill the son because she went and saved his life. But I don't want to dwell too much here because there's a lot of uncertainty as to what's happening in verse 24 about who it is that God's seeking to kill. But what transpires here in verse 26, where am I looking here? No, this isn't what I was. Look over in chapter 18. That's where I wanted to look. I was looking for a verse that was in the different chapter. In chapter 18, We'll look at this in more detail in just a minute. But in chapter 18 and verse 2, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back. Moses goes to Egypt, and everything that we know that happens, that transpires between Moses and Pharaoh, has happened by chapter 18. In chapter 18, Moses has now led the Israelites across the Red Sea there at Mount Sinai. Verse 1 of chapter 18 says that Jethro heard about what happened. And so Jethro, verse 2, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back with her two sons, verse 3 and 4. And verse 5 says that Jethro came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness, where he was encamped at the mountain of God. So perhaps it was even in chapter 4, after Zipporah, we don't know all of the emotions that are involved, but Zipporah may have been a little upset after the encounter in chapter 4, when there's death being talked about, particularly about your own children, that might get your attention. And at that point, Moses may have said, after what transpired in chapter 4, look, why don't you go back home until I'm able to deal with all that's going to transpire in the next year? If it wasn't then, at some point, Zipporah and the sons went back to live with Jethro. So again, here's a helpful man who's taking care of, as you would expect a father and a grandfather to do, of his daughter and grandchildren as Moses goes on and deals with those things that are transpiring in Egypt. Number three thing I want us to see is that Moses was a man who was respected and loved. He was respected by Moses. Why else would Moses go and ask him permission to leave? He's respected by his daughters. You know, when his daughters came back in chapter 2, and he asked, why are you back so soon today? An Egyptian had helped them. They had let an Egyptian help them. Perhaps they could have, you know, fudged the truth a little bit to keep their father from knowing that they had let an Egyptian help them. But they respected their father enough to tell him the truth. And of course, Zipporah lives with him for 40 years and then lives with him probably another year while Moses is in Egypt. And then look in chapter 18. We saw where Jethro takes Zipporah and the two sons, and they go to meet Moses, who is with God's people out at Mount Sinai. Ten commandments have not yet been given. Those are going to be talked about in chapter 20. But verse 6, Exodus 18, verse 6. Jethro said to Moses, I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and your two sons with her. So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law. When was the last time you saw somebody do this to their father-in-law? Meet their father-in-law, bowed down, and kissed him. Does he respect this man? Does he love this man? Did this man do a great deal for him during those 40 years? And so they both asked each other in verse 8 about their well-being, as anybody would do. You know, how you doing? Oh, I'm all right. How you doing? Oh, we're doing all right. You know, you give the general how you doing kind of things. And so they went into the tent to talk. Here's a man who's grateful. He's hospitable. He's generous. He's a helpful man. He's somebody who's respected and loved by his family a great deal. Here's also a man who has a deep reverence for God. Moses and Jethro go into this tent. Look in verse 8. Moses told his father-in-law what? What did he tell his father-in-law? So Moses in chapter 4 goes to Jethro and says, I want to go back to my people, see if they're still alive. Jethro says, go in peace. He goes back to his people. Are there a lot of stories that happen between chapter 4 and chapter 18? Are there a few plagues that he might tell his father-in-law about? I mean, would those be stories that you would be telling for the rest of your life? I mean, would there be stories about the Red Sea being parted that you would, you know, would you leave that? Would you forget that part of the story? Well, you're telling your father, here's all that happened. You know, you see family that you haven't seen in a year, and you try to catch up, you know, and inevitably there's something that you forget, but it's probably insignificant anyway. You know, you think Moses left out the Red Sea, you know, and then later on, oh, I forgot to tell you something that happened on the way back. No, he told him all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians, verse 8, for Israel's sake. All of the hardship that had come upon them on the way. Notice that. He doesn't just tell them what God had done. He tells them about some of the hardships they had dealt with. But not just how these hardships had come upon them, but how the Lord, the end of verse 8, had delivered them. What's Jethro's response when he hears all of this about God? He rejoiced at what he heard. He rejoiced for all the good which the Lord had done for Israel, verse 9, whom he had delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Pharaoh said, "Blessed be the Lord, who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, and who has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord, that Jehovah," notice it's all caps, "now I know that Jehovah is greater than all the gods, for in the very thing in which they behaved proudly," talking about the Egyptians, "he was above them." Here they were. How many gods did the Egyptians have? One or two? Believe they had a god for every possible thing on the earth. A god for the grass, a god for the stars, a god for the sky, a god for the trees. I mean, they had a god for everything. And so Jethro says, "I know that Jehovah is greater than all the gods, including all the gods of the Egyptians." Here they were, the Egyptians, in their pride with all of their idolatry, God was above them. It's on a slide in a minute, but I want to deal with it now, and we'll skip it when we get there. The Bible says, what is verse 1 called Jethro again? He's the priest of Midian. We don't know what deity Jethro was a priest to. When we read priest of Midian, we automatically assume, well, he was a priest to Jehovah. But we don't necessarily know that. He's in the land of Midian filled with idolatry and wickedness. If he was a priest unto Jehovah, which I hope he was, how did he know about Jehovah? How did he know about God in Midian? It's possible that it had just been passed down. Jethro was a descendant of Abraham. You remember when Sarah died that Abraham had took another wife. Remember her name? Keturah. He marries Keturah. This is in Genesis chapter 25. And one of the sons that Keturah has is named Midian. And then in chapter 25, Abraham tells Keturah and those children, to go to the east. And so the Midianites are called the people of the east. They're told to go to the east. He was sending them off. And we don't know every reason, perhaps, why he did that. In my mind, it's probably because God wanted there to be a clear picture of who the lineage of Christ was coming through. It wasn't coming through Keturah and Midian and any of those. The lineage of Christ was coming through Isaac. And so he sends Keturah. And it's interesting, I wish we could talk about this, but it's interesting that Keturah, in Genesis 25, he takes her as his wife. In other places, like I think in the chronology of 1 Chronicles chapter 1, she's called his concubine. We think about her being, his wife after Sarah. Other places in the Bible, she's called his concubine. And so then it said that he sent his concubine to the east. Anyway, Jethro is a descendant of Abraham. Because he's in the land of Midian, at least the Midianites are a descendant of Abraham. But perhaps Jethro is even directly himself. And so it's possible through that connection that he knew about God, that he knew about Jehovah, and that he was really a priest unto Jehovah. But it's also possible that he was a priest unto some other deity. If he was a priest unto some other deity, how do you think he learned about God? Moses. When Moses gets there at 40 years of age, does Moses know about God? How did he learn that being raised in Pharaoh's house? How did he learn about Jehovah being raised in Pharaoh's house? Isn't that awesome? That God's providence allowed Moses' mother to raise him. Moses should have been dead, right? Moses should have been killed as a baby. But the providence of God allowed Jochebed to put that baby in the river for Pharaoh's daughter to find him, for Pharaoh's daughter to tell Miriam, Moses' sister, go and find a caretaker for Miriam. I mean, you see the providence of God working through that whole thing. Here's Jochebed. Who's she going to teach Moses about? Idolatry? Gods? No, she teaches him about God. So at 40 years of age, he goes out to see his people. And that's what transpires with him killing the Egyptian. Anyway, if Jethro did not know about Jehovah before Moses got there, surely Moses filled him in. And when you get to chapter 18, it's obvious that Jethro already knew God, already knew who Jehovah was, and when he hears about what God has done, he rejoices, he blesses God and says, you know, I know that there's nobody like God. Out of his reverence comes his worship. Notice what happens in the verses that follow. After he says, blessed be the Lord, after he says, now that I know the Lord is greater than all the gods. Verse 12, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, remember he's a priest, took a burnt offering and other sacrifices to offer to God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat the bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. And so Moses, and this is the slide I was talking about where I thought we would, we've already talked about that, so we'll skip that. But here's this idea of worship that we see in the life of Jethro. When we think about priests, sometimes we limit what we know about the priests to the Mosaic age, don't we? I mean, we think about Aaron being the first priest. Well, he wasn't the first priest on the face of the earth. He's the first priest under Mosaic law, and he's for sure the first high priest. And so it's through Moses and Aaron and the law of God that the priesthood, as we know it, and as we read about in the book of Hebrews especially, and Old Testament book of Leviticus, that's how the priesthood came into, God's Mosaic age priesthood came into existence. But there were priests, that's one, right? There were priests who lived before that. Can you think of another one besides Jethro? Melchizedek. What would be, okay, if you're not living under the Mosaic age, if you're living before that, under what we call the patriarchal age, what's your function as a priest? I mean, are people actually coming to you to offer sacrifices to God? Those people that are coming to you are your family. That's why we call it the patriarchal age. In the patriarchal age, that father acted as both the prophet with the message coming from God to go to the people. He acted as the prophet. He also acted as the priest, offering those sacrifices from the people to God. And that's the function that Jethro had. And so it's interesting when you read, what is that, verse 12? That he offers sacrifices. By the way, this is the first time we read about sacrifices being offered, I think first time, since Moses, or what's his name, Noah did it when he came out of the ark. So here's a man who knows about sacrifices, knows that he's to offer sacrifices, knows that he's to do it in worship to God. And here he offers these sacrifices. Who comes to see and to be a part of it? It's interesting to me that Aaron comes there to see and to be a part of it. So here's this priest who, when he hears about what God has done, it's just automatic that he worships God. And this is where we need to be. That worship just needs to be a natural response of our faith, not something we have to do. Something that when we know what God has done in our life, it's just automatic. It's a priority. There's nothing that's going to interfere with our worship to God. I think I've got one more point, and I've got about two more minutes. And it's chapter 18 where we see this, and I wish we had more time to look at this. But in chapter 18, you start in verse 13 and go through the rest of the chapter. Jethro sees Moses judging the people of God. Verse 13 says that he does it from morning until evening. Moses spends an entire day listening to people gripe. I mean, that's what it is. He's the judge, and all of these people with all of their complaints against their brethren are coming to Moses. Well, he did this, and she did that, and well, they did this to me. And he's got to sit there and listen to all of this. And there might be some major problem that comes, and then there might be some little ticky thing that somebody's just got their feelings hurt, and Moses is sitting there listening to it. So Jethro watches this. He observes what Moses does before he ever says anything. And then he comes to Moses in a very straightforward way, says, and is it verse 17 where he says, the thing you're doing is not good. Moses, this is not going to work. First of all, he respects Moses, and it's interesting in the advice that he gives him. You get to verse 23, and he tells him, if you'll do this, if the Lord says to do it, don't just do what I say because I say to do it. You listen to me, then go check with God. See if it's okay with God, and then you do it. And if you'll do this, then you'll be successful in what you're doing. Let me talk about just some very brief points. We won't get to all of these there. He told Moses he needed to delegate. Moses was going to wear himself out. He was going to wear the people out. Moses wasn't going to be able to do what he needed to do. I mean, Moses is, he's the leader. And if he's got to sit there and listen to every single little problem that somebody's got, is that keeping him from doing what he needs to be doing? He's the prophet of God. He needs to be teaching. But if he's sitting there doing all of these little things, he can't be teaching. So he tells him to gather a sub-government, as it were. And you put these, you appoint other men. And notice what he says about these other men in verse 21. Is it verse 21? They need to be able men. They fear God. Men of truth who hate covetousness. Would you like for judges today to have to fulfill those qualifications? God says, appoint judges underneath you who can deal with all of these little matters, but they've got to meet these qualifications. Folks, when our nation was founded, that's where our nation was. You know, then we, never mind. Then we get into all this other stuff. But successful governments and successful judicial systems can be founded upon those same principles. And it was successful for Moses. Moses was able to ease his burden so that he could go and teach. And then these other men fulfilled their role. I wish we could have dealt more with that. The main point in Exodus chapter 18 is that idea of delegation. And the church needs to learn that today. You know, elders don't have to do all of the work. They need to delegate so that the elders can be about more important business. We see that in Acts 8, where the apostles were not going to serve tables. They appointed qualified men to do that in their place. I think there's a lot we can learn from Jethro. I'm sorry we ran through some of that. New quarter will be starting a week from today.